Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dorothy Gundy, Anna Mateo, and John Russell. Later, Ashley Thompson and Katie Weaver have a special report on one of America's national treasures. But first, this report.
The United States Secretary of Education plans to change the way colleges and universities deal with accusations of sexual assault. The era of rule by letter is over, said Education Secretary Betsy DeVos in comments last Thursday to the news media. DeVos is promising to replace a set of rules from a 2011 document known as the Dear Colleague Letter. It was given to school officials during the presidency of Barack Obama. The letter expanded on Title IX, a U.S. law barring sex discrimination in schools that receive financial support from the federal government. It said Title IX can also be used to protect victims of sexual assault and harassment. This meant schools were required to, among other things, offer a clear way for students and employees to report claims. In addition, colleges and universities must provide special medical services for victims. The schools also have to hold their own fair and open investigations, in addition to any criminal investigations by the police. If they fail to meet these and other requirements, the Education Department has the right to block their financial support. However, the government has yet to make use of such punishment.
Secretary DeVos has promised to replace those rules, which she says created a system that failed students. She spoke during a visit to George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Instead of working with schools on behalf of students, the Obama administration weaponized the Office for Civil Rights to work against schools and against students, she said. DeVos spoke several times about protecting the rights of both sexual assault victims and those accused of carrying out attacks. She said the discussion about the issue has wrongly been formed as a competition between men and women. DeVos did not explain how the rules will change. But she did say her office will ask the public and universities for help in developing new ones. Critics of the Dear Colleague letter cheered her announcement. They claim the current rules do not treat the accused and victims equally, but instead weigh more heavily against the accused. Victim activist groups, however, called the Education Secretary's message a step in the wrong direction.
New York lawyer Andrew Miltenberg has represented students accused of sexual assault. He said he was pleased to see the government recognize that schools had been mistreating the accused. Up until now, everyone's been frightened of saying what DeVos said because the fear is it would be seen as being against victims' rights, he said. Know Your Nine is an activist group for sexual assault survivors. Its members said the speech sent the message that there is no one that will hold schools responsible for protecting students. Sejal Singh serves as a policy coordinator for the group. She said, "I really fear that DeVos will take us back to the days when schools often violated survivors' rights and pushed sexual assault under the rug." Debate over the 2011 memo has been rising in recent years. Critics say the rules ask school officials with little legal experience to act as judges. Also, they say the standards required for evidence are too low.
In U.S. criminal courts, the accusers must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a suspect is guilty. But the 2011 letter told colleges to judge students based on whether it is more likely than not that they committed the offense. During her speech, DeVos agreed with critics who say the current rules are too complex and hard to understand. They also depend on the lowest standard of proof, she added. Every survivor of sexual misconduct must be taken seriously. Every student accused of sexual misconduct must know that guilt is not already decided, she said. At the same time, she made it clear that acts of sexual misconduct are unacceptable and must be dealt with directly. Never again will these acts only be whispered about in closed-off rooms or swept under the rug, she promised. About 25 protesters gathered outside the George Mason University building where DeVos spoke. Some were women who said they were sexually assaulted at their schools.
Former Obama administration officials disputed the comments DeVos made. Catherine Lamin led the Education Department's Office for Civil Rights during Obama's presidency. She defended the current rules and said the courts have supported them several times. Lamin added that her office ruled on behalf of students accused of sexual assault many times. She criticized DeVos for opening the rules to what she called essentially a popular vote. But other education leaders said it is too soon to know how a change in federal policy would affect schools. Gloria Larson, the president of Bentley University in Massachusetts, said her school would continue to follow the Obama administration rules. American Council on Education Senior Vice President Terry Hartle says many schools will likely do the same. His organization represents about 1,800 college presidents. But Hartle disagrees that DeVos's speech means she will treat sexual assault accusations less seriously. The Obama administration took a very important step and raised the importance of the issue, Hartle said. But they missed the target, and we need to go back and ask whether or not we've got the policies in place that we should. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. This is the program that explores the origin and uses of popular words and expressions in American English. Today, we are going to talk about autumn. In half of the world, summer has come to an end. Swimming pools have closed. Children are back in school. The days grow shorter and the weather cooler. In many parts of the United States, trees appear on fire as their leaves turn brilliant shades of gold, orange, and red. From the Pacific Northwest to New England to the Mid-Atlantic and Appalachian states, the autumn leaf-changing scenery is breathtaking. Autumn is also called fall. This is probably because it is the time when trees lose their leaves and they fall to the ground. During fall, children around the United States love to gather leaves into large piles and jump into them. But why do we have two names for one season? In the English language, calling the season autumn first began in the 12th century. But the word was not commonly used until about the 16th century. This is about the same time that people began using the word fall to mean autumn. However, even earlier, the season was called harvest. In the early days of the United States, autumn was a time for preparing for the winter months by collecting and preserving food. People gathered corn, nuts, and berries. They also dried and salted meats to feed them through the long, cold winter. In modern times, refrigeration, grocery stores, and pizza delivery help us survive through winter. But in autumn, we still need to prepare. If you have a fireplace or a wood stove in your home, you will collect, chop, or buy firewood. You may also need to prepare your home by fixing or weatherproofing doors and windows. If you have a car, you make sure the tires and fluids are also ready for the cold winter months. These preparations are called winterizing. Actually, many people winterize their wardrobes, too. They put away their lightweight summer clothes and flip-flops and bring out their coats, sweaters, and boots. To prepare for the winter months, some animals gather food. The squirrel is well known for its skill in this activity. Squirrels gather and store seeds and nuts in their nests. They search the ground for fallen nuts. They pick nuts from tree limbs, sometimes throwing them down to the ground below. This hoarding helps them survive the winter. And it gives us a common expression. To squirrel something away means to save it for future use. Things you squirrel away become your stash. We often use this expression when talking about money and food. But any resource you may need later can be squirreled away. For example, a child might squirrel away chocolate, hiding their stash from brothers and sisters. This guarantees the child can satisfy their sweet tooth at any time. Unlike squirrels, you can squirrel things away during any time of the year. Also, unlike squirrels, who are furry flurries of activity during the autumn, many people slow down during this time. The expression autumn years refers to the later years of a person's life, especially after a person has stopped working. For example, she worked hard her entire life. She saved her money and invested it wisely. So she was able to enjoy her autumn years in comfort. She was finally able to travel around the world. This time of life can also be called twilight years. Regardless of your age, autumn can be a sad time for gardeners. People who spent the entire summer cultivating their gardens may feel sad to see the empty garden beds of autumn. As summer ends, so does this episode of Words and Their Stories. And like summer, we will return. Not in a year, but rather next week. I'm Anna Mateo.
The autumn leaves drift by my window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your
On November 11th, the Louvre Abu Dhabi Museum will open in the capital of the United Arab Emirates. The museum is part of a project designed to appeal to millions of visitors every year. The waterfront museum will hold hundreds of pieces of art representing ancient and modern times around the world. It will include Middle Eastern objects and paintings, as well as works by Western artists. The Louvre in Paris, France, is one of the most famous museums in the world. In 2007, France agreed to take part in a joint project to open an art museum in Abu Dhabi. French officials say the collection does not face any restrictions. Jean-François Charnier is the scientific director of Agence France Museums. He said the museum organizers had complete freedom in making decisions about the art to present. "You have nude statues in the museum, contemporary paintings. You also have religious images from all religions," he said. The works will represent major periods of human development and will show connections between different cultures, Charnier said. "The objective," he said, "is to show that in history there are more links and bridges than walls." The museum has major pieces of art, including a 15th-century painting by Giovanni Bellini and a 19th-century painting by Osama Hamdi Bey. The museum also has a 3,000-year-old Egyptian funeral set. Famed French architect Jean Nouvel designed the museum. It is almost 100,000 square meters in size. It includes a series of white buildings under a huge, rounded steel top. The steel is cut in numerous places and shapes to let in daylight and produce beautiful shadows. French Culture Minister Françoise Nyssen spoke at a news conference in which the museum opening was announced. "At a time when some forces are attacking history by destroying work, taking our heritage hostage, this is an essential act," she said. "It is civilization responding to barbarity." I'm John Russell.
This week on our National Parks Journey, we travel to the northwestern state of Oregon. Here, you will find a huge, deep lake. Its waters seem impossibly blue. It is the deepest lake in America and one of the deepest lakes in the world. Its water is among the clearest and purest found on Earth. Around the lake runs the wall of an extinct volcano. In the middle of the lake, a small island rises over 230 meters above the surface. Welcome to Crater Lake National Park.
The lake's beauty inspires artists, photographers, and nature lovers. That beauty was born from the violent burst of Mount Mazama about 7,700 years ago. Hot liquid called magma rose from deep under the mountain, causing it to collapse. The powerful burst destroyed the surrounding area. Huge amounts of ash fell on the land. The burst also left an enormous circular hole in the mountain's center. Scientists call this a caldera. Over the next hundreds of years, rain and snow filled the hole with water. Rainfall and snowfall are the lake's only source of water. It has no connections to the rivers and streams around it. That is what keeps its waters so pure. As water collected, plants began to grow in the area again, and animals returned. Scientists say it took about 250 years for the lake to rise to its current water level. Crater Lake is 592 meters deep. It is one of the 10 deepest on Earth. But its depth is not the only remarkable quality. People are awed by its water color and clarity. Crater Lake is so clear that on most days you can see nearly 30 meters below the surface. The lake takes on its intense blue color because of the water's clarity. Sunlight reaches deep into the water. Crater Lake gets its name from geology. A crater is a large, bowl-shaped area on top of a volcano. The crater that formed the lake sits within the larger caldera.
Native Americans were in the area even before the lake's formation. Researchers have found artifacts buried under layers of ash and dust from Mount Mazama's huge eruption. Following the burst, Native Americans considered Crater Lake to be a holy place. Ancient Native American stories describe the eruption of Mount Mazama. European explorers and settlers did not arrive in the area until the middle 1800s. In 1865, a hunter became one of the first non-Native Americans to reach the shores of Crater Lake. In 1870, a boy in Kansas read a newspaper article about the strange lake in Oregon. The story about Crater Lake fascinated the young William Gladstone Steele. He promised himself he would one day see this lake. In 1872, Steele's family moved to Portland, Oregon, about 375 kilometers north of the lake. 13 years later, Steele honored his promise and visited Crater Lake. Its beauty moved him greatly. He began a 17-year fight to preserve the area as a public park. Steele was a writer. He described one of his first visits to Crater Lake in 1886 in the West Shore magazine.
Not a foot of the land about the lake has been touched or claimed. An overmastering conviction came to me that this wonderful spot must be saved, wild and beautiful, just as it was, for all future generations.
His proposal of creating a national park did not please nearby sheep herders and miners. But his efforts succeeded anyway. On May 22, 1902, Crater Lake became the country's fifth national park. It remains the only national park in Oregon. And William Gladstone Steele is called the father of Crater Lake.
Crater Lake National Park covers 740 square kilometers. The lake itself makes up less than 10% of the park. It also includes surrounding mountains and thick forests. The trees shelter many kinds of animals, from black bears to elk to spotted owls. About 480,000 people visit Crater Lake National Park each year. They explore by car, bicycle, or on foot. Roads that encircle Crater Lake usually are open from July through October, depending on weather. They provide breathtaking displays of the lake's unusual blue color, as well as the forests around it. Crater Lake National Park also has more than 140 kilometers of hiking trails. The Cleetwood Cove Trail drops more than 200 meters down to the edge of Crater Lake. It leads to a spot where swimming is permitted. The water is extremely cold. Most swimmers cannot stay in for more than a few minutes. Crater Lake's average water temperature is just 3 degrees Celsius. In summer, the lake's surface warms to about 10 degrees Celsius.
Visitors can also catch a boat from the end of Cleetwood Cove Trail. Park rangers lead visitors on boat rides around the lake. Visitors can also take boats to Wizard Island. The piece of land sits in the western part of the lake. Volcanic eruptions formed Wizard Island. It rises over 760 meters above the lake floor. However, most of the island, about 500 meters, is underwater. At Wizard Island, visitors can hike, swim, and fish. It is also a wonderful place to relax and enjoy nature. But such extraordinary places can be found all over the park. Discovering one's own is part of the magic to experience at Crater Lake National Park. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.